All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. A beautiful, beautiful daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Mem Aleph 41. We are picking up Mem Amud Beis 40b. We'll say at the two dots. It's 11 lines up from the bottom. Really beautiful Gemara today. So first of all, So also remember again, we were discussing this case in the Mishnah. This is the case of Kofer Bakol. Up until now, we've been dealing with the Shvuas Modeh B'Miktzas. I go ahead and I claim, Reuven, you owe me $1,000. Reuven says, I only owe you $500. So that triggers the oath of partial admission, Shuas Modeh B'Miktzas. Now we're transitioning to the next case. Reuven, you owe me $1,000. And Reuven says, I owe you nothing. We'll say, how does the Mishnah Paskin? If Reuven denies the claim in its entirety, then ultimately, again, he is putter. Says the Gemara, Amrav Nachman, Umashbiyan also Shvuas Hasis. Rav Nachman says, okay, it is true that he is pater, meaning he's pater midaraisa from a shvua, but we will administer what also is called a shvuas hesis. A shvuas hesis, and again, we'll get into this a bit more, but on a very simple level, shvuas hesis is a shvua dirabanan, a rabbinic shvua. Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Hesis, loshon shuma, sheshamu chachamim alav shvua, excuse me, sheshamu alav shvua. So we'll say ultimately again, Heses is a lashon ultimately again of Shuma evaluation and sum to place. So they place literally an evaluative Shavua upon Rabosai. So we impose Rabbinic Shavua. In other words, what the Rabbanon do is as follows. Even on a technical level, which we'll discuss, when you're Kofer Bakol, when you deny the claim in its entirety, so there is, this is interesting, there is some validity and there is some credence ultimately to the denial, but yet again, the Rabbanon will still say, I have to take a Shavua. Says the Gemara, my time, they will say, what's the logic behind this? And I will say, what the Gemara is asking over here is, why would we impose a rabbinic shvua? If somebody is potter from a shvua, so ultimately, again, why would we impose a rabbinic one? To which the Gemara answers, because you have a chazaka, that I would not be claiming something, ela im kein yesh la alav. I will say, where there's smoke, there's fire. The general chazaka is normal people do not claim things that are not theirs. Therefore, again, if Lemaisa, I am claiming that Reuven owes me $1,000, that must mean that what? There must be something to it. Therefore, the way to resolve whether or not there's validity to my claim is how? Is to go ahead and administer a rabbinic oath. Adrava, the Gemara second, so just the opposite. Chazokin Adamei is Panabifnei Balchovo. So we'll say, remember again, let's take a step back. Why is it that the Mishnah Paskins, it's an interesting case. Reuven, you owe me $1,000. Reuven says, I owe you nothing. So we'll say, what's the halacha? He's Pater. What's the logic of what they say that he's Pater? The logic is, in Adamei is Panabifnei Balchovo. We'll say, the logic is that a person cannot give a bold-faced lie in the face of his creditor. Right? That just normal people don't do that. In other words, I could go ahead and engage in half-truths. So if I owe you $1,000, then what? I could justify saying, listen, I'm going to admit to $500 now, and I'll pay the remaining $500 at a later date. But to tell you that I owe you nothing, to look you in the face, my creditor, who did the tova of lending me money, and to say, I owe you nothing at all, That far I can't go. So it says the Gemara, Adrabo, Chazaka in Adonai's Panamifnei Balchovo. So in general, we have a principle that a person would not go ahead and be so brazen to deny the debt in its entirety in the face of his creditor. Ishtamuti hutuhut kam shtamit. And therefore, we'll say, what does it do? What does a person do? Person buys himself a little bit of time. Savar ad ki dahava li uparanale. And a person figures to themselves at the end of the day, so I'll buy myself a little bit of time. And what? And when I have the money, I'll repay you. So I'll say, the idea over here is, that's why we impose a rabbinic shvua. So the Gemara is suggesting over here that even though we say a person would never deny a debt in its entirety, we assume that the complete denial of Osai is not there to deny the debt. Rather, what does it do? What is it for? It's a stalling mechanism. So right now, I'm going to tell you I don't have the money. Am I going to pay it back?
Yes.
Of course. Excellent. Very good. Of course I'm going to pay it back. But I need to buy myself a little bit of time. So what am I going to do? I'm going to say, I owe you, but I don't have it. So instead, I'll just deny it. And then again, I'll go ahead and I'll pay him back later on. Therefore, I will say, what happens over the Rabbanon go ahead and the Rabbanon say, no, you have to take a shvua. So we have to take a shvua in order to go ahead, because it will say, also, sometimes, as we all know, so when people justify things, so justifications, that's the wrong word, not justifications, but when a person is like, rationalizations have an incredible way of evolving. So it begins as, of course I owe you the money, I'll just pay you later on, could very easily evolve to what? I'm not paying you. So we'll say, so ultimately, again, in order to avoid that, so Chazal instituted a rabbinic Shavuot. Dom Rav Idi Bar Avin, Am Rav Chista, Hakofer B'milva Kosher Li'edis. We'll say, that's why, again, Chazal said, Rav Chista said, that if a person ultimately, again, denies a pikadon, a person denies a debt in its entirety, they are still Kosher Li'edis. Right? They're still fit to be give a testimony. On the flip side, B'pikadon Pasol Li'edis. If a person goes ahead and will say, what? Denies a pikadon, ultimately, again, a person will be pasul le'edus. Take a look at Rashi just a moment. Kashul le'edus, Rashi says, kashul le'edus, v'lo amrin chashad amamonuhu, ele ishtamuti kamishtamit le'i mishun demil v'lo otzar nitna, ve'achshav biyado b'mat lifroa. So we'll say, listen to this. So at the end of the day, if it turns out that I lied regarding a debt, I'm not pasul le'edus, because we assume that at the end of the day, was it my intention to pay the debt? Of course it was. So why am I lying? Just to buy myself some time. I don't have the money right now. I need to buy myself a little bit of time. So I'm just lying that I didn't borrow to give myself time to pay back. On the flip side of Bosa, if a person lies about a pikadon, so lying about a pikadon of Bosa is inexcusable. Why? Because since a person doesn't have a right to use the pikadon, do not, if I deposit something with Reuven, he doesn't, have the right to use it. Therefore, if he lies about the fact that he has it, that's already rishus, and it'll be pasul le'edus. Rav Chaviva, masnia seifa. Rav Chaviva went ahead and took Rav Nachman's statement about a shvuas hesis, and he went ahead and he said it applies to the second part. Manali biyadecha, the seifa. Manali biyadecha, amr lohein. Well, so listen to this case. I say to Reuven, you owe me money. So Reuven says, you're right. L'macha, amr lo tineuli. So the next day I come to Reuven and say, Reuven, it's time to pay me back. So what does he say to me? Nasatev l'cha. So he says to me, I paid you already. So what's that l'cha? Potter. Well, say, look, at the end of the day, if he's claiming that he paid me back, and again, I have no testimony or any kind of documentation to the contrary, so let me say again, he's Potter. I'm Rav Nachman. So we'll say, again, in Rav Chaviva's model, this is where he applies Rav Nachman Shuas Hasis. I'm Rav Nachman, Umashpin also Shuas Hasis. And Rav Nachman says, ultimately, again, we impose a Shuas Hasis upon him in this situation. Man de Masnia Resha, Kol Shekin HaSeifa. We'll say, so the one who applies Rav Nachman's statement to the first case that we quoted would certainly apply to the second case. Tap of Memalef Amadalef. Uman de Masni La Asifa. We will say the one who goes in the pleasure of Nachman's statement to the second case, which is the case where I say, Reuven, you owe me money. Reuven says, okay, I go to him the next day, pay up, and he says, I paid you already. So, the man de Masni La Asifa, Hachu di Kadrar de Mamona. We'll say it's in the second case where, again, we could see why we would imply, Shvuas Hesis. Why? Because Drad Damon, Abosai, literally means there's a loss of money. Loss of money because in case number two, what's the difference, Abosai? Reuven admitted the debt. He admitted that he owes me money. It's just that now when I come to go out and collect payment, now what happens? Now he says, I paid you already. But Lamaisa, because he admitted it, therefore, again, maybe that's where I have a Shvuas Hesis. Aval Hassam, but in case number one, the Lekha Drad Damon, Abosai, Drad Damon literally means a loss of money. Case number one, there's no quote-unquote loss of money. Why is it not a loss of money? What the Gemara means is in case number one, there was never even an admission of the debt. So maybe if there's no admission of the debt, then what? Then the Maisa, there's no Shuas Hesis. But we'll say, bottom line, the way that Raman Paskins is, we would impose a Shuas Hesis in both of these cases. So whether a person is Kofer Bakol, even though, again, on a case of Kofer Bakol, there is no Shua Doraisa, but there will still be a Shua Drabana Shuas Hesis. And also in the case, we'll say, where a person goes ahead and says, Reuven, you owe me money. Reuven says, yes, I come to him tomorrow, he says, I paid you already, we would also impose a Shuas Hesis in that case as well. We'll say, third line down, Memalef Amadalef. We'll say, what is the difference between a biblical shvuah and a rabbinic shvuah? Ikabin Abbas is actually quite interesting. Here's a practical difference between them. Meifach shvuah. And we'll say, can you flip a shvuah? Now look at Rashi for just a moment. Meifach shvuah. Second line from the top in Rashi. Im amr ha-nitva l'toveya hishav v'tol. We'll say, listen to this. I go to Reuven. I say, Reuven, you owe me $1,000. So let's say, again, I will say, Reuven, so let's say Reuven goes in and says, you know what? You swear to that effect, and I will pay you. But we'll say that's called hefach shvua. It's called flipping the shvua. So we'll say in the doraisa, with the shvua doraisa, you can go ahead and flip the shvua. However, I'm sorry. By doraisa, we do not flip the shvua. In other words, we'll say mid doraisa, whoever is chayv in the shvua has to take it, and that party does not have the right to flip the shvua onto the other party. B'dirabanan mafchinon, we'll say ultimately again, in dirabanan you can flip the shvua. L'mar baravashi daran b'daraisa nan mafchinon, shvua, ma'ika bein daraisa l'araban. We'll say, according to Ramar baravashi, he says, then in daraisa, you can also flip the shvua. Then ultimately again, wherein lies the distinction between a shvua daraisa and a shvua dirabanan? Listen to this. Does Beis Din go ahead and seize the property of the defendant? Look at Rashi. Mechas l'nechase, third line down in Rashi. Im amar eini nishba ve'eini mishalim, yardin l'nechase ve'nos din lazer. Listen to this. What happens if I say, Reuven, you owe me $1,000? And I will say, let's say it's a case where Reuven would have to take a shul, but Reuven says, I'm not swearing. I'm not swearing and I'm not paying. So, like, what do you do in a situation like this? So, what's I said? The simplest thing would be for Beis Din to go and to seize property. So, it says the Gemara, when do we seize property? So, b'daraisa nachtin l'nechasei, b'drabana lo nachtin l'nechasei. We'll say, if it's a shvua daraisa, Beis Din will seize property. If it's a shvua drabana, Beis Din will not seize property. Other Rabbi Yossi, the Amar b'drabana nami nachtin l'nechasei. And according to Rabbi Yossi, he says that even by drabana, we go ahead and we seize property. So we'll say, disnan, where does Rabbi Yossi get this? We'll say, it's actually really interesting. Mitzias chashu. We'll say, listen to this. Acheresh shote v'kata. Right? And remember again, in halacha, these are all people who lack legal capacity. Acheresh is a deaf mute. Shote is someone who is deranged, right, or insane, and a katan, right? Ultimately, again, a minor. So we'll say, what's the halacha? Let's say they find something. The acheresh shote v'katan find a $100 bill on the ground. We'll say, what happens if I go ahead and I take that $100 bill from them? Okay, I'm not the nicest guy, but I'm $100 richer. Right, I go ahead and I take it from them. But we'll say, what's the status of that act? So the Gemara says, Yesh bohem gezel mipnei darkei shalom. So we'll say, so the Rabbanan rule, that ultimately, again, it's theft, mipnei darkei shalom. Which we'll say, is another way of saying that what? Midaraisa, it's not theft. Why is it not theft, we'll say? Why? Because since these people lack capacity, they also have the inability to acquire. But midrabanan, what we call mishum darkei shalom. In order to preserve and to create a just society, we don't want people going around and taking anything that does not belong to them, even if from a legal perspective it does not constitute an act of theft. Therefore, midrabanan, you cannot go in and take it from them. Rabbi Yossi Omer Gezel Gomer. Rabbi Yossi says ultimately that what? Rabbi Yossi says that it's Gezel Gomer. V'amar Rav Chista, Gezel Gomer Medivreim. And Rabbi Yossi says that what it means is, it's Gezel Gomer Medivreim, meaning it's rabbinic theft. It's rabbinic theft. So we'll say, Salamai Nafkamino, what does that mean? Lo Tzio Bedayonin. Ultimately, again, I'll say that according to Rabbi Yossi, you would go ahead and what? That if, let's say, the guardian or the parent of the Chayyar Shota V'Katan were to come to Beis Din to claim against me, Beis Din would extract the $100 from me that I took from the Chayyar Shota V'Katan. So what do you see from here? That according to Rabbi Yossi, even for Dirabanans, Beis Din Nachtin L'Nechasei. Beis Din will go ahead and seize property. Therefore, also remember again, we're on a very simple mission. We're just trying to figure out what's the distinction between a Shua Daraisa and a Shua Dirabanan. The last suggestion floated was that what? The distinction is, does Beis Din seize property? So we're suggesting for a Daraisa, yes. For a Dirabanan, no. But according to Rabbi Yossi, he holds that even for a Dirabanan, yes, we do seize property. Beis Din will go ahead and seize property. So what's the distinction between a Shua Daraisa and a Shua Dirabanan? Well, so listen to this. Where does this come up? This comes up, Rabbi Yossi, or the distinction comes up, where ultimately, again, the party who has to take the shvua is chasher al hashvua. Rabbi Yossi, he is suspect for swearing falsely. Take a look at Rashi. It's the fourth line from the top on Rashi. Shekinegdo chashud. Rashi's hanitva, the person being claimed, the defendant, chasher al hashvua. So we're going to see this case in just a few days in Rabbah. It's a very interesting case where what happens, I claim that Reuven owes me $1,000. So okay, let's say it's a case where Reuven has to take a shvuah. There's only one problem, which is what? Which is Reuven is chasher al shvuah. He has, unfortunately, a record of swearing falsely. So in general, again, we are reticent to administer an oath upon someone who we know is ready and willing to swear falsely. What do we do in a situation like that? We essentially flip the shvuah. We flip the shvuah. So what we say is, okay, you plaintiff, right, you plaintiff, you'll take the shvuah. So in this case, again, I'll take the shvuah and I'll collect my $1,000 like that. Bidaraisa, so the Gemara says, I'm sorry, Ikemarayu shekenegdo chashad al shvuah. Bidaraisa, shekenegdo chashad al shvuah. Apchina lay shvuah, v'samu a'idah. So I'll say, ultimately, again, when it comes to shvuah, daraisa, so if I'm claiming against Reuven the money and Reuven's chashad al shvuah, the Beis Din will flip the shvuah back on me. I'll take the shvua, I'll swear, and I'll collect my money. However, b'dirabonan takanti, it will say a rabbinic shvua is already a takana. V'takanta l'takanta lo avdinan. And I both say, we do not go ahead and make one enactment upon another enactment. In other words, I both say, this already is too many steps. In other words, the concept of essentially, meipach shvua by chashidala shvua, though we flip the shvuah, when the defendant is suspect to swear falsely, is a rabbinic enactment. This is a dirabanan. But in general, again, we don't like to pile on dirabanans. So if somebody's taking a shvuah daraisa, and the defendant is chashar al shvuah, will make the plaintiff swear. But lamaisa, if we're already dealing with a rabbinic shvuah, to then go ahead and flip a rabbinic shvuah, which is a rabbinic enactment on top of a rabbinic enactment, that we're not going to do. So the Gemara says, dirabanan de palikali rabbi osi, but according to the rabbanu argon rabbi osi, don't rabbi dirabanan lo nachtil and chase. So listen to this. So according to the Rabbanan, ultimately, who do argue in Rabbi Yossi. So we're going back a second. So now, what we've essentially done is we've shown the distinctions between a rabbinic shvuah and a Rabbanan shvuah. Now the Gemara is going back to just revisit one of the points made. So listen to this. According to the Rabbanan who argue in Rabbi Yossi, remember, Rabbi Yossi holds that by a shvuah Rabbanan, the Beis Din will descend and seize property. According to the Rabbanan who hold that by a shvuah d'Rabbanan, Beis Din will not seize property, mayavdinale. So we'll say, how does Beis Din enforce a rabbinic shvuah? In other words, we'll say, so according to Rabbi Yossi, he says that if even for a rabbinic shvuah, Beis Din will go and will seize property. Okay, I understand the enforcement of a rabbinic shvuah. According to the Rabbanan who hold that it's only by shvuah d'Oraisa that Beis Din seizes property. So what is the mechanism for enforcement of a rabbinic shvuah? Twish the Gemara says, Mishamtinalei. We excommunicate him. That if a person ultimately, again, either won't swear, or again is swearing false, we will excommunicate them. That'll be the mechanism that we will force a person to be honest. Amalei Ravina Ravashi, hai nakte bekovse, dineshavke liglimehu. So let's say this interesting expression, the Gemara says, this is like grabbing someone, nakte bekovse, which also means grabbing him in his private parts, in order to go ahead and get him to release the cloak. So we'll say the idea over here is, what the Gemara is saying over here is, I don't understand, you're going to excommunicate him until he goes ahead and he yields? Okay, so that's essentially what we'll say. So that effectively, again, is placing him under constant duress until he gives in. Ela mayav dinale. So we'll say, so what do we do? Amrale mishamtinale ad dimatu zman nagde v'nagdinale v'shavkinale. Rather, I will say, what do we do? First of all, take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, nakte lekovse de l'shavki leglimi. So we'll say, literally, nakte means you grab hold. Kovse, I will say, means a cluster, which is a reference, ultimately, again, to his private parts. De l'shavki leglimehu, until he goes ahead and he releases the cloak. So Rashi says, ochez bebeitzav hatuluyim bo, ad shiyitin lo talash shalav kilomar, kevin de shantinale li olam, ad deleisavle, less lecha lemechas than lechase adach mihar. So we'll say, it doesn't make sense what you're saying. You're telling me that by a shvuah d'rabbanan, you're going to go ahead and you're going to excommunicate the guy essentially until he does what you want. Well, isn't that effectively the same thing as seizing his property. In other words, what's the difference? To which the Gemara says, you're right. Rather, what does it mean? We excommunicate him. Now we excommunicate him until it comes time to get Malkus. Now what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. Ad dematiz man nagde, lebasar tlasin yomin kidarminan rav mangid aman demashi shante drabban alay tlasin yomin. Listen to this. The halacha is that if Bezin excommunicates you, Bezin expects you to remedy the situation that led to your excommunication. If you do not remedy your situation, but instead you allow yourself to remain in a state of excommunication, Bezin flogs you. They give you Malkus. Now, as both say, you're getting punished for getting punished. Really what you're doing is, you're getting punished for allowing yourself to remain in a state of punishment, as opposed to, as both say, it's an incredible yisod. To get myself into trouble, okay, that happens. That's forgivable. What's unforgivable is to get myself into trouble and to not do anything to get myself out. That's where there's liability. So I'm excommunicated. If you allow yourself to remain in a state of excommunication up till 30 days, then what happens? Beis Din flogs you. We'll say at that point in time, once Beis Din flogs me, v'shav kinoy. We'll say then that's the punishment. So the answer is, according to the Rabbanon who say that Beis Din will not seize property for a rabbinic oath, for the enforcement of a rabbinic oath, so essentially what happens is as follows. We excommunicate the individual, and again, if he allows himself to remain in that state of excommunication up till 30 days, we will go ahead and flog him, and once we flog him effectively, again, we're done. Case is closed. I'm going to wrap up. Hai man da apik shtar achar. Listen, these are great cases. Hai man da apik shtar achar. Va'amri le shtar paruho. Listen to this. So, I produce a document. I say, Reuven, document says you owe me $1,000. Reuven says, yep, but I paid it. I'm not contesting. You lent me money, and I paid it. Amrina le lav kol kaminach zil shlem. We say to Reuven, okay, that's very nice, but you're not believed. In other words, remember, we'll say, generally, again, if I lent Reuven $1,000 and he repaid the loan, who should really have possession of the document? Reuven should have it, right? Because again, remember, that's the receipt. Somebody who paid back a debt would never let the lender hold on to the document because that allows the lender the power of collection. So here, I produce the document. Reuven says, yes, I agree, I owe you money, but I paid you already. So we say, Reuven, you're not believed. Zil shlim. Go pay. Vim amar lishtabali. And if Reuven says, well, let's silver swear, that's what? That he lent me money. And if he swears to it, then I'll pay him. Armina le ishtabale. So Bezin will say to me, you swear and collect your money. We'll say, what's the difference in this case and pogim es shtaro? Now look at Rashi for just a moment. Lepogim shtaro, Rashi says, disnan hapogim es ksuvasa lo tifra ele b'shvur. Now we'll say, now listen to this. The case of pogim es ksuvasa, what is this case? Ketzad, haisek ksuvasa ele b'zuzur. We'll say, let's say again, a man owes his wife a ksuva of 1,000 zuz. Vi Amar, hiskabalt ksuvasech. So the man claims that he paid his wife for ksuva. Vi Omeres lo hiskabalti ella mana. She claims, I only received a mana. I received just a partial payment. Hoil umodis b'mana pogemes eshtar ksuvasa. V'lo tifra eshtar ella b'shvus. So we'll say pogemes b'shtar essentially is a case of modi b'miktsas. Since she admitted that she was paid part of it, she can collect the rest of it except with a shvua. Deleika lemismach su ashtara. Deika lememar tfei kibla v'hashta darmat mashpien lo. Ma yofa kocho mishat mishim pagam ashtara. So we'll say, listen to this. So at the end of the day, what the Gemara is asking is as follows. I don't understand. In this case where I produced the document, and all Reuven is saying is that what? Is that he paid me already. Why should I have to take a shvua in that case in order to go ahead and get payment? At the end of the day, I have the document. So, in other words, why is this any better than a case, ultimately, again, where a person admitted partially that they received partial payment, to which the Gemara Samali Hasam Afagav Delotoin. Here's the difference that we'll say. In the case of Pogim Ashtaro, even though, again, he doesn't make the taina, we taina for him. However, ultimately, again, we'll say, it's in this case over here where we say to the defendant, go and pay. So again, the difference over there is that in the case, ultimately, again, of Pogim Ashtaro, so we will taina on behalf of the husband. In this case over here, we will not taina on behalf of the defendant. It just happens either that if the defendant says, you lender swear and collect, that the Beis Din tells the lender to swear and he could collect. Vitzor mirabbanu. I will say, if the person involved over here is a Talmud Chacham, lo mashpi'in alei. We will not make the Talmud Chacham take a shvua. So says the Gemara, Amrli Rav Yemar Rav Ashi. Tzor mirabbanu mashlich gilim adinji. So what does that mean? The Talmud Chacham could take anyone's property and doesn't have to take a shvua? Ella lo mizdakin alei ledina. Rather, Rav Ose, what it means is as follows. Look at Rashi. Lo mizdakin alei. Li shava de mechsi techashtin alei. Velo ligbos lo de ha'amar le ishtabali de lo praticha. So let's listen to this. What it means is, let's say in this case, the lender is a Talmud Chacham. Rav Ose, so under normal circumstances, the Gemara is suggesting, I go to Reuven, they say, Reuven, you owe me $1,000. I have a shtar. Reuven says, fine, if you swear that I owe it to you, I'll pay you. So Beis Din tells me under those circumstances, just swear. Swear, take the shvua, ultimately you get repaid. However, again, I will say, if the lender is a Talmud Chacham, Beis Din will not go ahead and make him take the shvua in order to collect payment. Says Gemara, what does that mean? So Talmud Chacham could just take payment without the shvua. What it means is no, that Beis Din essentially doesn't get involved. That Beis Din will say, listen, you know, we're not going to force you to take an oath. We're not going to administer it because it's a lack of covet. It seems to be that we don't trust you without an oath. On the flip side, we also can't allow you to collect without an oath either. So essentially the Gemara says is that for the din of the Talmud Chacham, we can't impose an oath, but at the same time we can't get in payment without the oath. So obviously in a case like this, it would be up to the volition of the Talmud, it would be up to the Talmud Chacham to decide whether or not to take the oath and ultimately collect the money. So the Gemara goes by, Tamar li biyadecha. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, we'll say these great cases. We'll say very important halacha. If you go ahead and you lend someone money in front of witnesses, repayment must take place in front of witnesses as well. So we'll say what the Gemara is suggesting over here, or I should say what Rabbi Yehuda is suggesting, of Rav, is that if I go out of my way to lend money in front of witnesses, that indicates that what? That I want every part of this transaction to take place in the presence of witnesses as well. So just like the lending took place in front of witnesses, I want the repayment to take place in front of witnesses as well. So the Gemara says, Ki amri se kami de Shmuel amrli. So when I said this in front of the Shmuel said, Yochol lo marlo, praticha bifnei ploni uploni, v'holchu lam lemedina sayam. Shmuel said, well, here's the problem. That doesn't prevent the borrower from essentially trying to manipulate the circumstances. The borrower could say, sure, I paid you back in front of witnesses, but what? I said, where are they? They're overseas, right? They're overseas. So in other words, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is as follows. Rav seems to be saying that I could create a mechanism that essentially prevents anybody from denying claims. That if I as the lender go out of my way to lend money in front of witnesses, this requires ultimately again the borrower to repay in the presence of witnesses. All Shmuel comes along and says is that's fine, but that doesn't prevent the borrower from saying, sure, I paid you back in front of witnesses. Where are they? Midyasim, overseas. So Tanan Marnali Biyadech Amar Lohein. But says that I say to Reuven, you owe me $1,000. Reuven says, yes, I do. What happens? I come to him tomorrow and say, Reuven, time to pay me back. So what happens? So he says, Nasativ lacha. He says, I paid you back. I paid you back already. What's that lacha? Potter. What's that? The halacha ultimately is, Rashi says, Nasativ lacha potter, af mishvua. So remember, in this case of Rabbi Osei, he is potter because at the end of the day, again, I don't really have any counterclaim to him. Now, again, as we saw before in the name of Rav Nachman, he's going to have to take a shvua, says. So he'll have to take a rabbinic shvua. But midaraisa, he's potter. Now, Rabbi Osei, in this case over here, since I'm claiming the debt in front of witnesses, is it not as if I lent him in front of witnesses as well? And yet, fekatani potter. And yet, Rabbi Osei, again, so remember, I'm claiming this debt in front of witnesses. So because I'm claiming in front of witnesses, we'll say this is on day number one. I'm claiming in front of witnesses. Reuven, you owe me money. It's taking place in front of Beis Din, in front of witnesses. So we'll say that is as if the transaction is happening in front of witnesses. As such, again, shouldn't the repayment have to... So we'll say, what the Gemara is trying to say over here is that like the claiming or the request for repayment of the loan is like the equivalent of the making of the loan. Since I'm requesting repayment in front of witnesses, what I'm essentially saying is repayment must take place in the presence of witnesses. And yet, what do we see over here? Bekatani Potter. Yet, what Rabbi Osei? That when Reuven afterwards claims, I paid you back already, apparently, again, we take that claim, say, okay, he paid back already, and we say that he's Potter. To which the Gemara summoned Beis Rabbi Osei, Tiyufta Derav. Tiyufta Dravasi. So it says this, Ravasi, I will say this would effectively be a refutation of the Shita Ravasi. Amalch Ravasi, Ana ki amri hecha de meikara osfe beedim, delo lididehem ane hacha ha hemne. Rabbi says, no. What I'm saying is, when the original loan took place in the presence of witnesses, when the original loan took place in the presence of Edim, that's where the lender is telling the borrower essentially what? No offense, but I don't trust you. Right? No offense, but I don't trust you. We'll say, by the way, I'll say an interesting halacha in just a moment. So when the original loan takes place in the presence of witnesses, that's when the lender is saying, I'm lending you in the presence of witnesses, and I expect repayment back in the presence of witnesses. And if you claim that you repay me and you can't produce witnesses, then at the end of the day, your claim is unequivocally false. But I'm both saying, where the claim for repayment was made in front of a base, in front of witnesses, and then Reuven subsequently says, I paid you back, but without witnesses, that's not considered to be in violation of the terms of the debt. The only time where witnesses are necessary is where when? Is ultimately, again, when the original loan was made in the presence of witnesses, then we say that repayment must be made in the presence of witnesses as well. But if witnesses were only introduced sometime later on in the process, then repayment need not be done in the presence of witnesses. Rav Yosef Masni Hachi. It was a Rav Yosef had a different version. Am Rav Yehudam Ravasi. Hamal v'eschaver be'edim in etzrach l'faro be'edim. So let's listen to this. In this version, I lend money to Reuven in the presence of witnesses. So even if I lend him money in the presence of witnesses, Rabbi Osai, he is not obligated to pay me back in the presence of witnesses. Vim Omar, al tif arini ela be'edim. But Rabbi Osai, listen to this. If I make an explicit condition, and I say to Reuven, Reuven, I will only accept repayments from you in the presence of witnesses, then what? Sarech lefaro be'edim. Then Enochinami, Reuven is obligated to pay me back in front of witnesses. So we'll say, to hear the distinction between the two versions, in version number one, it was understood that if I lend money in the presence of witnesses, there is an understood condition, there is an implicit tenai, that repayment must take place in the presence of witnesses as well. In version number two, the tenai is only binding on Bosai if what? If it's explicit. It's only if I explicitly say, Reuven, I am lending you money in the presence of witnesses. Right? And therefore, again, I do not, or I should say differently, I say them explicitly, I only want you to repay me in the presence of witnesses, that ultimately, again, that becomes a binding condition. When this was said over in front of Shmuel, ultimately, Shmuel says, still, just understand this is not foolproof. Why? Because Reuven could always claim, sure, I paid you back in front of witnesses, but what? They went overseas. In other words, they were here, but they went overseas. To which Shmuel says, Tanan, Manali biyadecha. We learn, Shmuel says, I say to Reuven, you owe me $1,000, Amar lo hein. Reuven says, yes, I owe you. Amar lo, al titnei uli ela bifnei edim. I say to Reuven, I only want you to pay me back in front of witnesses. L'machar amar lo, tenehu li. So next day I come to Reuven and say, Reuven, pay me back. So what does he say to me? I said, I paid you back. Ultimately, why? Because he has to pay me back in front of witnesses. I, to you, to the Shmuel. Rabbi said, this seems to refute Shmuel, because remember, what does Shmuel say? Shmuel says, Rabbi said that he could always claim, he paid me back in front of witnesses, but he went to Medina and said, I'm going to Shmuel tonight. Shmuel says, Rabbi said, ultimately, this is a machlokes tanoim. This sanya, because we learned, Beidim he'll be sicha, Beidim parli. So we'll say, if ultimately I say to Reuven, Reuven, I lent you money in front of witnesses, you have to pay me back in front of witnesses. Oh, yitain o yobi raya shenasana. We'll say, either Reuven has to pay, the bar has to pay, or he has to bring a proof that he prayed in front of witnesses. Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira Omer, yocholomer lo praticha bifnei ploni uploni, v'ocholam dinasayam. No, we could claim, I paid you in front of ploni uploni, but what, they went overseas. Parich Rav Acha, nimay di b'shas ha'va'a koi. I don't know what they were talking about at the time of the loan. Maybe this claim, I will say, for witnesses is coming at the time of the claim. And this is what the lender says. Did I not lend you in front of witnesses? You should have paid me back in front of witnesses as well. But I will say, if at the end of the day the tenai was made at the time that the money was given, that it has to be paid back in front of witnesses, then what? Divriya kol chayiv. So I will say, ultimately, again, unless of course the borrower could produce the witnesses that he paid back, he certainly will be chayiv ultimately again to pay the lender. Amar apay b'shei d'rava, hilchosa. I will say, what is the halacha? Hamal b'schaveira be'idim, tzarek l'faro be'idim. I will say, if you lend someone money in front of witnesses, you have to pay them back in front of witnesses. So I'll say, what's the halacha? Rapapa Mishay the Rava, Amar Hamal Beschaver Be'edim. Ain't Tzarech Farah Be'edim. Okay. So I'll say, Rapapa, the name of Rava says that you have to go ahead and pay back in front, if you lent money in front of witnesses, right? You have to pay back in front of witnesses. And then Rapapa, also the name of Rava, that Hamal Beschaver Be'edim. Ain't Tzarech Farah Be'edim. Vim Amar Altifraini Ela Be'edim, Tzarech Farah Be'edim. But we'll say, you know, but however, if an explicit t'nai was made, because the t'nai says that I lent you money with witnesses, you must pay me back with witnesses, then Tzarech Farah Be'edim. Amar Lo Praticha B'fnei Ploni Ploni Bachlam Dinas Hayam Ne'eman. But we'll say, if at the end of the day, Reuven claims I paid you back in front of so-and-so and so-and-so, and they went overseas, ultimately, again, he is Ne'eman. We'll say, how do we pass in Halacha L'maisa? We pass in like this, that just because you lend someone money in front of witnesses does not automatically obligate the borrower to pay back in front of witnesses. Rather, we adopt the second version of this discussion, which is that the only time repayment in front of witnesses becomes a binding obligation is if an explicit condition is made. So if at the end of the day, I lend money to you and say, Reuven, right, I hereby am lending you money on this condition, or with the explicit understanding that you will pay me back in front of witnesses, that becomes a binding obligation upon Reuven. Now again, could Reuven still technically say, I paid you back, ultimately again, and the witnesses went overseas? He could make that claim, but he would have to ultimately bolster and prove that claim. I will say, you should know, Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that you are not, that if you lend money to someone, not in the presence of witnesses, you, the lender, are in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol. You are in violation of placing this. Why, Bosai? Because if you lend money without witnesses, ultimately, again, it's too easy to deny that claim. Right? So, okay, if there's a signed shtar, then the Shulchan Aruch says a little bit less, right? But ultimately, again, he says the Shulchan Aruch is very machpir. Kitzer talks about this even in greater depth. This idea being that one is supposed to really lend money ultimately again in front of witnesses in order that ultimately again there should be no. Now, again, if the same thing, if there's a signed shtar between the parties, then the shtar essentially acts as eidos as well. The point that Allah is really trying to make, Rabbi says, that what? Is that, again, and unfortunately, people, we see this all the time, that even when things start out between friends, you know, money has an interesting way of just causing different people to act in different ways. Therefore, if you're going to lend money, again, sometimes people lend money and they're lending it, but it's really tzedakah, so they don't care if they get it back or not, fine. But if a person, mamish, is lending money, betaras halva, mamish, it's a loan, so one should make sure to structure it in a legally enforceable way, whether that's with eidos, or whether that's ultimately, again, with a shtar, because otherwise, the case just says you're setting up the borrower to make it too easy to deny the claim. Okay, the Gemara goes weiter. Says the Gemara, both say, hahu damle. We'll say the Gemara just gives a mnemonic. Skip down, third wide line. Who don't the chavre? Let's listen to this. A person says to his friend, "Ki paratin parinli ba'ape ruven mishmer." What's this? I lend. We'll call him the borrower money. We'll just call him borrower for the purposes of this case. So I lend borrower money, and I say to him, "Listen, when you pay me back, I want you to only pay me back in the presence of Reuven and Shimon." Right, paying back in the presence of Reuven and Shimon, they hate them. Paying back from Reuven and Shimon. Also, the party ba'ape trema alma. He paid me back in front of Shimon and Levi, like two other guys. So, we'll say, what's the halacha? Amar abaye ba'ape betray amrele, ba'ape betray parale. So, I'll say ultimately again. So abaye says it's fine. When I said pay me back in front of Reuven and Shimon, we'll say, did I mean Reuven and Shimon? Did I mean Reuven and Shimon? No. What did I mean? Two people. So the fact that he paid back in front of Levi and Yehuda doesn't make a difference to me. I meant paying back in front of two people. He paid back in front of two people. Amrali Rava says no. Lahi kamrali ba'api Reuven v'Shimon keichid lo nitche. Says no. It's not true. When I specify two people, I say Reuven and Shimon. Rabbi say, then who do I want repayment made in front of? I wanted Reuven and Shimon. Why? Because Rabbi say it's too easy otherwise for him to deny certain liability. Therefore, again, I want him to dafka pay me back in front of Reuven and Shimon. So there was a person who said to his friend, "Ki parato li parinli ba'ape betre." When you, Reuven, I'm lending you money. When you go and you pay me back, I want you to pay me back in front of these two people. The tanu hilchasa. I was saying, I shouldn't say these two people. I want you to pay me back in front of two people who teach mishnayos. In other words, that I wanted you to repay me in front of tamidi chachamim. Teach mishnayos. Okay. Azul pare bein delay le delay. So I say, so watch this case. So I go to Reuven. I say, Reuven, listen, here's $1,000. When you pay me back, I want you to pay me back in front of Tamidi Chachamim, people who could teach Mishnah. So what happens? He goes ahead and he pays me back. But I will say, Reuven pays me back just between me and him. No witnesses. Now I will say, now what happens? Isnisu hanach zuze. Well, say, so what happens? He gave me back the money, and the money got lost. The money got lost. Let's say something happened, some mishap occurred, and ultimately the money got lost. Asa lekameid Rav Nachman. So the borrower and lender come before Rav Nachman. Amar lei. So we'll see what happens. The lender says, in kabule kablis sinhu minach derech pikadam. So we'll say, watch this. So the lender says, yes, I did get back my money from you, but the truth is, it wasn't as repayment of the debt. Why? Because I made an explicit condition that what Rabbosai, repayment of the debt could only occur where, or when? In front of two Talmidei Chachamim who know how to teach Mishnah. So it's true, I got the money back from you, but I got the money back from you as a pikadon. I agreed to watch it on your behalf. V'amina lehavi gabai pikadon ad misramu beitrei detanu hilcha so mekaim tina, and I figured I'd hold it on your behalf until when? Until we found ourselves in the presence of two Talmidei Chachamim who could then act as the witnesses for the repayment, and then, only then, I would accept it as repayment. But now, Nebuch, it got lost through not my own fault, and therefore again, you're chayv to repay me. Amar lei, so we'll say, so they responded back to the lender. Since you are admitting that you received the money, therefore, piraon ma'al yahavi, it is considered to be a bona fide act of repayment. Okay, and I amrit likeyome tenai, and if you're worried about the fulfillment of the tenai, zil ayasinhu daha anavarav sheshes titanei nehilchasa v'sifra v'sifri v'tosefta v'kulei tamuda. And again, if you need witnesses who are proficient in teaching Mishnah, Rav Nachman says, bless you, just come before me and Rav Sheshes. We both know a little bit of Torah. We're happy to act as your witnesses. So both said, bottom line for that case, what they were telling the lender is, listen, once you, so I understand you made a condition that repayment should only take place in front of Talmidei Chachamim. So both says, listen to this. Therefore, when the borrower comes along and says, I'd like to repay you, you have every right to what? You have every right to what? To say no. I'm only sitting in front of two Talmidei Chachamim. However, once you accept that money, Rabbi say, then what? Then what? That is repayment. The fact that it didn't take place and what it didn't conform with your Tanai, that was a decision you made to accept that money in non-conformance of the condition that you made. But once you accepted that money, then by definition the debt's been repaid. So what happens? I say to my friend, give me the $100 that I lent to you. Amar lei lo hayu dvar me'olam. So he says, what $100? What are you talking about? Azal aisi sadi de osei apari. Let's listen to this. So then what happens? He brings witnesses, and I'm supposed to listen to this. What do the witnesses say? So remember, I say, Reuven, you owe me $1,000. Reuven says, I owe you nothing. No, not even that I paid you back. I owe you, lo hayu dvar me'olam. I never borrowed money from you. I bring witnesses. What are the, Reuven's been witnesses. What do the witnesses say? The witnesses say, Reuven borrowed money, but he paid him back. Yeah. So now we've got a real problem. So remember again, Reuven says, I never borrowed money from you. The witnesses, now, we'll say, here's the chap. The witnesses, yes, you did, but you paid it back. So the witnesses, again, don't agree with Reuven, they don't agree with me. I'm claiming, I lent you money, I didn't get paid back. The witnesses says, yes, still, but you got paid back. Reuven says, never borrowed money. The witnesses says, yes, you did, but you paid back. So we'll say, I'm rabbi, mind of it. Inu amar no osve, inu amar pare. We'll say, what are we going to do? Because the same witnesses ultimately again who says that Reuven borrowed are also the same ones who says that he paid back. Rava amar, Rava says, we'll say, in a case like this, kolo omer lo levisi, kamer la parati dami. We'll say, any case where you say that you did not, any case where you did say that you didn't borrow, saying I didn't borrow, we'll say, is the equivalent of saying what? I didn't pay. And this Rabbi say, interestingly enough, what it sounds like in this case over here is we'll splice the Edus a little bit. That the Edim are enough to say that what? The Edim testified to the fact that a loan took place. Once Reuven, once Reuven is saying I didn't pay back, once Reuven is saying I didn't borrow, that's the equivalent to Lachli of saying of what? As what? I didn't pay. Therefore, I will say, if we put this all together, what we have is now witnesses that place Reuven at the scene of the loan, right? Therefore, we know Reuven borrowed money, and the fact that Reuven himself says, I never borrowed is the equivalent of saying, I never paid, and therefore, Aloch HaLamaisi, we will be obligated to repay back the lender. Rebbe, so we'll stop here for today. We'll pick up more with that case and other cases tomorrow, Mir Sasha.